there's a certain level of natural talent that you've got to have to be able to race at the level that some of these guys do. You look at Lewis Hamilton, you know, he came from nothing and now he's the most successful racing driver ever. That aspiration is there, and anyone with the right drive and with the right backing can do it. The most exciting thing we're doing at the moment is we've been filming since the start of the year with Amazon Prime.
I'm Declan Burke, and welcome to a special edition of The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindsets, motivations, and opinions of the elite talent, brands, and rights holders represented by Sport Endorse. Today's guest, a self-confessed petrol head, is Si McNally, partnerships and commercial manager for Paramaxed Racing, a leading BTCC team. Si has been in and around motorsport his whole life and has been a part of the PMR journey since the team was established. You're going to hear Si's views on motorsport, why the BTCC is unique, and we'll gain a great insight into what is required to pull it all together for race days. Enjoy. So, Si, you're very welcome to this episode of The Sit Down with Sport Endorse. Let's get started with you. Where do you come from?
What, physically or work background?
Well, whichever you prefer, you know. What is the mystery around Si McNally?
So I started my career in automotive about 12 years or so ago. I came out of the army and ended up doing a few normal jobs in automotive, so working in motor factors and stuff. And then got involved in management consultancy. So I was working with a friend of mine as a management consultancy, and ended up working with a couple of motorsport teams in that, on kind of customer journey management and sort of taking people from from a basic premise of wanting to do something with race cars and building an experience around it. So we did Dubai 24 hour, we did Le Mans, and kind of took them and built a package around it. And that was my kind of, that's how I ended up getting into motorsport.
Okay, that's really interesting. So that's how you got into it. What attracted you about it? Are you a petrol head? Did you enjoy the speed aspect, or was it the engineering aspect, or what was it?
I'm a massive petrol head. My parents have always been into motorsport for as long as I can remember. My granddad was actually head of R&D on all the gas turbine projects for Austin back in the 60s. And when I was a kid, he used to tell me all sorts of stories about how they did like 160 miles an hour down the M1 when it was unrestricted, and how he got arrested in France for doing some ridiculous speed down the auto route there. And yeah, just I've always been a bit of a petrol head, really. So I think it was a natural thing.
Okay, so you could almost say it was genetic, maybe.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So, and like in terms of PMR racing, yeah. So what's your role with the team?
So I look after all of the commercial side of things, and that incorporates PR, marketing, basically anything you see where the team is out there, is kind of me. I put all that together and I choreograph it and I manage it, look after our sponsors, all of the behind the scenes stuff really that people don't think about, I would say. Keeps it interesting.
Okay, pretty cool. Which of course leads nicely, the way you finish that one, into how do you stay motivated?
I spend most of my life working, so it's do you know what? I love what I do. So I'm very lucky to do what I do. Motorsport is a very small industry, and at the level that we're at is even smaller. So I'm very lucky that even though it's hard work and, you know, all of us at the team put in a huge amount of hours, to see the fruits of it when we're winning races and things is what keeps you going, I guess.
Okay, pretty cool. Yeah, that being part of a team is definitely definitely special. And when you're doing something you love, it's not work, right? That's what they say.
Definitely, yeah, something like that.
I'm now going to tackle you just on motorsport. As you know, Sport Endorse represents a lot of different rights holders and brands, and in excess of now 1,500 individual elite athletes. So the question of sport, what would you say to somebody who asks you something like, is motorsport really a sport, or are the drivers really athletes?
I would say yes. I think there's a definition of athlete which most people think of as somebody that goes out, you know, you'll see them on a on the track, you know, doing 4,000 meters or running a marathon or something. But I think it's almost a mindset where you have a goal of achieving something very special, and you train and you live and you drive towards that. So I would say, yes, very much so. Motorsport is different to a lot of sports because it's obviously in a car, and the car is the performance aspect, but the driver has to be incredibly fit to actually drive that car at its best and at its limit for the time that we have to. So to give you an example, we were racing at Alton Park at the weekend, and the temperatures in the car were reaching something like 55, 56 degrees. And the guys are in those cars for like 40 minutes, and they're wearing double fireproof Nomex. They're completely sealed in there. There's no aircon, there's no airflow. You know, to do that and to win races to not fall asleep or pass out by the end of it, you've got to have a level of fitness.
God, that's fascinating. So from the point of view of, let's say, an off-track training experience, do you have guys in dressed up in like suits and saunas or what? I mean, it sounds like a form of torture, really.
I think they try and avoid it as much as they can. But, you know, most of our drivers, so Dan Lloyd is a good example, one of our BTCC drivers. He has a very rigorous training schedule. He's in the gym pretty much 5 or 6 times a week. He's out on his road bike. And it's not just the fitness training as well. The guys will do a lot of time in the simulators. So they will, you know, Dan in particular is fantastic in that when we're going to a track, he will go in the simulator for probably a couple of days beforehand and just absolutely pound laps in the simulator with different settings in the car just to familiarize himself with the nuances of things and where a bump might be that could affect the balance of the car and all these sort of things. And again, that takes a lot of drive and focus to be able to do that.
Absolutely. It's super impressive. And with very fast reflexes, I suppose, or am I dreaming? Yeah. I'd imagine no. You need, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a certain level of natural talent that you've got to have to be able to race at the level that some of these guys do.
Okay, pretty cool. So now to challenge you a little bit. So motorsport has a reputation for not exactly being environmentally friendly. Okay, we called you a petrolhead earlier. This could clearly be a concern for sponsors in today's world where ESG is a very prevalent theme. And there's a lot of talk about climate change again. And if you look at all the weather that's happening around the world right now, there's some pretty strange stuff going on. So what do you as a team do to combat this shift? Or do you do stuff to try and become more eco-friendly?
Yeah, we do actually. We're kind of one of the first teams in BTCC. Sort of 3 years ago, we started looking at ways that we can make ourselves greener. And the line we've always used with people is, you know, motorsport is never going to be a green sport because it is cars driving around as fast as they can and the infrastructure and everything. It's never going to be carbon neutral, but we can make it greener. So as a team, we've done a few things. We teamed up with SIG to produce a large number of aluminium bottles. So at the track now, rather than obviously on a hot day, we go through a lot of water. Mm-hmm. Rather than, I think we worked out, I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like 18,000 bottles of water a year we get through just at race weekends. And we've eliminated all of that by using these aluminium bottles and using plumbed solutions for cooled water. So that's you know, it sounds like a really simple thing, but actually it makes a huge difference. And if everyone did the same thing, it would make a massive difference.
That's pretty cool. I applaud that. Well done.
We've also worked with a company called Mastervolt, so they actually kit out yachts with batteries and power solutions and things. They converted our main race truck, which doubles as our office and workshop, to lithium ion power. So now when we're at the circuit, whereas you used to have a big generator hooked up to the side of the truck, we can now exist without being plugged in for 3 or 4 days and run all of our equipment. We can run the garage off it, everything we need to do without having to use a generator. So again, that helps.
That's great. Okay, so you're definitely trendsetting in that perspective.
We're trying, yeah.
Good stuff. So my last one on, let's say, generic motorsport. What do you think is the most exciting thing about it as a sport?
I think it's very spectator friendly. I think if we look at the BTCC, which is what we are kind of, it's the Halo level in the UK, and it is what we compete in. It's the third biggest motorsport in the world, and people can, they can get up close to their heroes. You know, it's not a private environment. It's somewhere where the fans can walk up to the front of the garage and they can see the driver chatting to the engineer. They could walk up to him in the toilet and ask for an autograph. You know, there's, it's, I think it's that engagement and that excitement of, you know, you've just spoken to this guy and now you're going to go and watch him on track. And there's a lot of relatability to it because you're going to get in your car and you're going to drive home. Hopefully not in the same way that the drivers do, but it's, it's just so, it's a relatable thing. Like anyone can sit there. Like you look at Lewis Hamilton, you know, he came from nothing and now he's the most successful racing driver ever. And, you know, that aspiration is there, and anyone with the right drive and with the right backing can do it.
That's pretty, it's a great story that, you know, that the principle of Hamilton, I'm a big believer in sport being a really accessible to all. Yeah.
And massively.
There are a few sports where it gets a bit pricey, but basically if you're good, you can generally get some backing. And actually that's part of what Sport Endorse helps with. So you've mentioned BTCC a number of times so far in our chat. What's the BTCC?
It's the British Touring Car Championship. So it's run now for 64 years, I believe, in the UK, 63 years. It's the most popular motorsport in the UK by a long way. It's the third most popular in the world. It basically sees normal cars. So we race in a Vauxhall Astra, but there are Focuses, Toyota Corollas, that, you know, it's normal cars going out there and basically battling hard. And people love it because it's wheel to wheel and it's bumper to bumper, and there are crashes and there are smashes and there are heroes and there are villains. It's very real life on the track, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly coming back to the point where they can get up close and personal with the drivers at different points, and it's accessible, is I think makes it clearly compelling in my mind anyway. So how does it battle or compare with Formula One, which has the, let's say, the champagne look about it, the flash guys, the, you know, the fashionistas, basically?
Yeah. It's more down to earth, I would say. It's very British. You know, all the teams are based in the UK. We solely race in the UK. It's a worldwide sport with visibility and viewers. But I think it's the reasons for its popularity is one, because the cars are relatable. As much as our Astras don't really bear much resemblance to a road car and are worth considerably more, they still look like an Astra. And, you know, you can see the drivers, there's often posts on the fan groups and stuff about people running into their favorite driver in Tesco and getting a selfie with them. And that accessibility, and it's more down, F1 is very, you know, to get into an F1 paddock, a pass is 5-10 grand. Whereas to get into a BTCC paddock, it's 20 quid. And that's, okay. I think that's why we get the numbers that we get, and the fan base is so loyal and so tight, I think is a good word for it, because everybody just comes back year after year after year and they just love it.
So what kind of brands typically get involved in sponsoring teams in the BTCC?
Do you know what? It's really varied, actually. There's such a wide range of fans, from, you know, a multi-millionaire who'll turn up in his helicopter to a family, you know, working class family that go to, you know, they scrimp and save to go to every race. There's some, the last few years there've been quite a few big brands that have sort of come on board. I mean, our title sponsor is Adrian Flux, which is one of the UK's biggest insurance companies, not just automotive, but home and everything, marine, everything. But there's Ginsters. They're a title sponsor of one of the teams. There's a lot of oil companies involved in it. There's so many. It's not just automotive. A lot of people think it would just be automotive companies, but it's literally everything you can think of.
And that's which makes perfect sense if you consider that it's got such a wide demographic and large fan base, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so much engagement at the track. You know, it's not just watching racing on the TV at home. It's being there, engaging with the fans. People love that, and I know a lot of the brands that have got involved in it at a smaller level have grown and grown exponentially year on year because they find that people will, because they engage with them circuit side, they'll go to the supermarket and they'll choose that brand of something, even though it's a bit more expensive, because they've had a good experience with it at the track.
Okay, that's linking back well in my mind to the fact that you said the fans are very loyal. So that's a really nice kind of synergy. If there is that kind of sponsors get, you know, benefit from that fan loyalty to the teams and the championship itself. So speaking, I guess, kind of a broader question around the BTCC, what kind of coverage does it get in terms of all the media channels that are possible?
So it's the most watched motorsport in the UK. It's the only motorsport that's on free-to-air TV. So it's broadcast on ITV. So we have 10 race days across the year, and they broadcast the whole day live, including all the support races and everything. So it tends to be from sort of 10:30 in the morning till about 6 o'clock at night. We'll take over ITV2 or ITV4. And that tends to see, I think 2019 is probably the best judge of numbers.
Sure, absolutely.
Because the last couple of years just haven't been there. We had just under 20 million individuals watch in 2019.
God, that's a big number.
Yeah, it is. And it's worldwide as well. I think something like, off the top of my head, I think it's like 600 million worldwide have access to BTCC on TV.
That's an even bigger number.
It is. And do you know, one of the biggest numbers, bizarrely, is radio. So I think it's something like 76 million people listened to it on the radio in 2019. It's staggering, the number of people that listen to it. And I guess that's if you're on holiday with a family and you're driving somewhere on a Sunday or something, you can have it on while you're driving. So we'll
take this moment to note to any brand managers who might be listening, if you're going to sponsor, which hopefully you will, PMR, make sure you include radio in your activation.
Definitely.
Anyway, yeah. So now that I've mentioned PMR directly, so when was the team established?
So we started as an entity in 2015. We actually, there was a team called Powermax Racing in 2014, which was us, but it was us. It was Adam, who's our founder, sponsoring a car. So he actually started sponsoring cars in 2011, 2012, and grew from there and realized that actually, if you do this right, it's a massive tool for visibility. And it worked so well in 2014 that in 2015 he invested a huge amount of money and set up his own team, which was Powermax Racing.
But that in and of itself is a phenomenal case study for the power of the visibility that it delivers and how that can impact bottom line businesses, right?
Exactly. And it does work. I know I'm obviously biased, but if you do it right, it really, really does work. I mean, it catapulted. So at the time, Powermax was a fairly small car care brand that was, you know, maybe in a few shops and selling a few thousand units. And by 2018, which is when we actually commercialized the team and went away from self-funding, it was in 4,500 motor factors across the country, 15 different territories across the world, you know, and that is all off the back of BTCC marketing.
My God. All right. Mental note, I'll pick up with you specifically on that, because there's definitely an article or a case study or two in that for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
So what kind of, I mean, do you have defined values for the team?
Just do the best we can. We're very, everyone that's here, we're not actually a big team when it comes to some of the teams in the BTCC paddock have been around 20, 30 years. They've won multiple championships. They've got 30, 40 people working for them full time. We're about 10 people full time, but we do everything to the best of our ability, and we all take a sense of ownership of what we do. Everyone takes it very personally, and you know that you'll often find that when we're preparing for races and stuff, the guys will be here at 2-3 o'clock in the morning prepping the car because we want to make sure that it is absolutely a 100%, and that's a value that we take to everything we do.
So it sounds quite familial in a way, yeah. Like it is. You're more of a family than a team in a way.
Yeah. I would say that's a good way to put it.
Okay, so then how big is the family? What are the roles? Who's daddy? Who's mum?
So Adam is our he's the guy that founded it all. He owns Power Maxed and Automotive Brands, which is now one of the biggest automotive distributors in the UK. Martin Broadhurst is our team manager. Anybody in motorsport at this kind of level is probably quite familiar with Martin. He was a crew chief for ProDrive when they won World Rally Championship for a couple of years. He's won a few BTCC championships. He's a very, very accomplished engineer. And then we've got, it sort of splits down into the team itself. Again, we're quite small, but we have full-time number one mechanics who are the guys that physically run the cars. On a race weekend, we have our own dedicated design engineer who's sat next to me, actually. He's again, a lot of teams don't have that kind of level of things. They'll farm a lot of it out, whereas we've invested from the beginning in having everything in house. And it's that familial thing, like you said, is a really good way to put it, because then we know everything that's going on and we're not waiting on people to you know, that might let us down on something. If we're managing it in house, we know that it's going to happen.
That's got to give the drivers presumably a great level of comfort as well.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. So one of the drivers, Jason Plato, he is the most, well, he was up until Sunday, the most successful British racing driver in history. Lewis Hamilton's just beaten him on race wins now. He's quite a big name, and he's been with us since 2019. And for him to want to stay with us as a, you know, we're almost a bit of a, it's a bit of a David Goliath thing. We're quite a small team, and usually with the smaller teams, you get, I would say, lesser drivers. But to have one of the top drivers in the championship ever, who's been in there for 20 something years and who wants to stay with us, is a massive shot in the arm, really. And it just shows that we're doing things properly, I suppose.
Absolutely. That's clear. So I think you mentioned there's 10 races a year. Is that correct?
Yeah. 10 race weekends. Yeah. 10 race weekends.
Okay. So where in the UK do those race weekends happen?
So I think it's 8 different circuits. So we start off at Brands Hatch, which is Kent. And then kind of we go down to Thruxton, which is Hampshire, Silverstone and Donington, which is obviously Midlands, kind of the heart of the country. We go to North Yorkshire up to Croft, and we go to Knockhill as well, which is Scotland. So there's something for everyone, really. If, you know, there's always companies that have a more focused base in certain places. So some of the financial institutions we work with, obviously that's London. Whereas some of the engineering companies tend to be Midlands, and then you've got some random ones scattered up north. So it's quite widespread.
I like the sound of that as well. I'd imagine that helps contribute to the fan base as well, because it literally, you know, encompasses the whole country.
Exactly. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does.
Yeah. So speaking of countries, and you've kind of mentioned this before, I think, but from the point of view of your team, you've clearly got a strong UK fan base. Do you have fans from elsewhere in the world?
We do. Central Europe is quite a strong one. North America, there's a lot of BTCC fans in North America. I think they like the fact that we don't just drive around on ovals and actually have corners. And South America, bizarrely, as well. I mean, to be honest, you can look all over. There's emails in my inbox from hundreds of people from all over the world who ask for signed posters. And, you know, we'll probably genuinely get at least one request a day from someone internationally asking for a signed poster. And if you look at the numbers, the TV numbers, international TV numbers, a big one is India, actually. There's a lot of people in India, sort of those kind of emerging markets seem to be buying into it quite strongly.
Well, that's pretty interesting. That's just the signed posters requests is an interesting one for me. I'm actually in France at the moment, as I think you know, Si, and I met Doug Ryder, who's the team principal of a team that took part in the Tour de France, which just finished recently. And when I'm chatting to him, the amount of people who come up and ask for free stuff is absolutely astounding. So in like 35 minutes chatting to him, I don't know how much was given out, but I kind of looked at him and said, God, Doug, you need a new budget line just for free stuff.
Yeah.
We have crazy, isn't it? But it's a healthy crazy.
It is. Yeah, it's good. I mean, we have a big retail presence at race weekends, and we've got a big 15 meter Arctic that opens up and everything, and that's kind of, it's mainly a mobile showroom for the car cleaning products. But the amount of people that come on there and ask for free stuff is just huge, and it's something that's worked well with certain brands in the past where they've wanted to get their brand out there, and we've partnered up with stupid things like pens or little bottles of car shampoo or glass cleaner or something. And if you dual brand something like that, and then every time somebody gets it out in their car and they see it, they've got the brand in front of them, and it's little things like that have a minimal cost but that stick in people's minds.
Absolutely. Interesting. Particularly because people tend to give people lifts in their cars. Yep. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to try and audit the eyeball tracing of kind of numbers on that.
Anyway. Do you know where we've had one good thing? We created or PowerMax, our parent company, created a vape glass cleaner, which is like a really, really strong glass cleaner design, so that if you vape inside your car or your house or something, you get a film on the inside of the windows. And I've said we need to speak to somebody and dual, you know, a vape company and partner up and dual brand this, because actually it's a really good product. And if you're giving it away to people, they're going to use it and they're going to see your brand and it's there in front of them. And it's just there, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's very cool. Having had a mother who doesn't vape anymore, but she's 86, God love her. But she did smoke a lot, yeah. Which actually, when I was thinking about this podcast, linked me back to standing on the side of the road at watching the Rothman Circuit of Ireland rally zoom by at different points as a kid. Cool. In the 80s. That's,
pretty cool.
I won't define what age I was in the 80s.
I didn't want to say anything.
Anyway. So in terms of sponsors, right? So let's now give a picture to anybody listening to this who is interested in sponsoring. What can they expect when they partner with PMR?
Do you know what? It's all very much what people want. There's no hard or fast rule to what we do with people. We take a lot of pride in our engagement programs. So we're very, one good example actually was back in 2018, or was it 2019? I can't remember off the top of my head. We partnered with Olympus cameras, and we did a really good program with them, whereby for the 10 rounds each year, they would have 30 guests on a Saturday. And on that Saturday, you know, these would be people that had either bought their new camera body, which was designed for sports photography, or had an interest in it, or we're looking at lenses or things like that. Some of the, you know, either an existing or a potential customer. And we did a workshop with them whereby there were three trained photographers, and they took a group of 10 people around the track, and they basically taught them how to use the camera to take pictures of the race cars. And we also did shots in the garage as well. And at the end of the year, there was a big competition, and the winning pictures that had been taken by all of these people won a camera body, a camera. They won a VIP weekend with us the next year. And it was a really good program and worked really, really well for them, actually.
Yeah, I love hearing that. I'm a massive believer in delivering experiences to people, because they stay long in the memory. I think build a massive amount of brand kind of loyalty as well.
And this is one of the things we always say to people is, you know, a lot of people think sponsorship is just putting a sticker on a car or putting a sticker on the clothing or something, and there's so much more to it. You know, that is just an activation tool, and it is how we work together to build that brand, to make it synonymous with something. You know, if somebody wanted to come on and sponsor us in a certain product line, let's say crisps off the top of my head, and they wanted to become synonymous with motorsport, there's so many things we can do with dual branding and engagement programs, and there's so many lanes to it. But another part as well, which is kind of unique to us, is I've touched on it before, that Automotive Brands, which is our main parent company, one of the biggest automotive distributors in the UK. We recently partnered with Rich Energy, who obviously manufacture energy drinks. And part of that deal is that we're looking at getting their fridges and their products into motor factories within the UK. And it's something they've struggled a little bit with breaking into certain markets, but we've come up with this plan whereby, you know, if you work in a garage and, you know, it's fairly likely that there's a high percentage of people there that drink two or three energy drinks throughout the day, rather than having to go to the shop and buy it, if you can ring up a Motor Factor and you can buy a case of these, or, you know, even one can, it's business for the factor, it's good for the brand, and it saves the person at the garage having to go out and get this thing. So it saves time and makes things more efficient for everyone just by having some products in there that you wouldn't normally think to sell.
That's pretty that's pretty interesting. And I think it's clearly illustrative of the fact that you guys do practice what you're saying, which is you treat every single new sponsor with a more like a partnership, I'd say. I mean, if you're looking at that and you're saying, you know what do you need? And well, we've got this pain point here, and you're coming up with a solution to help with that pain point in addition to, let's say, the traditional kind of assets around sponsorship, that's pretty impressive.
And we use the term partners. We never really use the term sponsorship, to be honest. It is all a partnership, because we don't want to be doing a single year deal with somebody. You know, we want to say to them, look, year one is a learning year, but we'll get it right, and we'll build. You know, you use year one as a building block to then build into year two and year three, and that tends to be how it works, to be honest. And we try and usually start, we don't want to necessarily go into somebody and say, give us £1 million and we'll do this for you. It's not about that. It's about showing that we can provide value, and that actually this does work, and the more you put in, the more you get out of it, and it's exponential.
Okay, that's very compelling. I challenge any listener who has heard that to come back to me if you don't agree. If you're treating each new brand as a partner and you're looking at pain points and certain outreaches, previous firms I would have worked with would have been very interested in being able to reach out or offer promotions to your fan base. Is that something you can help with? And I guess the question is around, I've sometimes come across this where rights holders can have rather large fan bases, but no direct way of contacting them. Have you a solution for that?
Yeah, we've done... The fans seem to like, everyone likes a freebie, but what fans really want is the access and to see things behind the scenes. We've done things before whereby we've actually worked with BTCC themselves on a couple of occasions and brought together two or three of our sponsors to do a massive big prize giveaway, and run that in conjunction with BTCC on their website, which sees something like, I think it's something like 120,000 individual hits a week or something like that. The numbers are huge. The reach has been well into the millions on that. And it's engaged a completely new... It's engaged the existing fan base and reminded people that they're out there, but it's also engaged a new fan base, which is, you know, it's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So engagement, right? That's bringing my head round to content being important. So, and I'm guessing I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask anyway. So when you're working with new partners and brands, do you work on producing bespoke content for them, or do you just kind of attach their logo to stuff that you do?
No, we'll always produce. I mean, it depends what the product is. We'll obviously... Everyone wants a different message to go out there, and we've got to balance messages between all of the sponsors. So it's not, I mean, we could have a thought whereby, say, if we're working with a certain sponsor and they go, look, we want to get this message out there. And it's like, well, actually, we work with these guys as well. Why don't we combine forces between the three of us and build a program that's good for everybody and actually will increase visibility from 10,000 to 150,000 because there's three of us doing it. And it's thinking, I don't want to use the term, but thinking out of the box a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's smart, basically. I would just call it smart thinking myself. But
managed to speak.
Yeah, well, gosh, terrible. We'll have to set you on fire, except we can't. So with all that keeps going on, and I know you're constantly on the move, what do you think, like if there were a couple of initiatives that the team's taking at the moment or things going on with the team, what are a couple of the most exciting things happening right now?
the most exciting thing we're doing at the moment is we've been filming since the start of the year with Amazon Prime for our own documentary series, which is going to be a 6 to 8 part thing that basically covers it's focused purely on us as PMR and our BTCC activities. We've already filmed a lot of it. They were down here with us yesterday, actually, for most of the day filming things. We had a sponsor down here for a meeting that they came and filmed. That is by far the most exciting thing we've got going on at the minute. And it's something that, obviously, there's Drive to Survive, which is a huge thing that was on Netflix, but it followed the whole of the F1 paddock. It didn't focus on one team, whereas we took that premise and said, right, let's do this for us. We approached, well, there's a production company that I've worked with quite closely on a number of projects. We approached them. They said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. We put a pitch together. We went to Amazon and they absolutely loved it and said yes there and then, which is pretty exciting.
That's hugely exciting. Hugely,
yeah, it exciting. Is.
But I have a question now. Sorry. And I apologize in advance, but how scripted is it? I mean, you mentioned Drive to Survive. I've watched a bit of it. Very exciting. Very well done. I don't know how scripted it was, but it looks, it's been edited to almost be like a Hollywood movie.
Do you know what? It's not at all. There's shoot lists. Obviously, we have to have shoot lists, but
sure.
It's not scripted at all. There's no, it's all very fluid and very natural. I think when it comes out, you'll be able to tell, because there's all sorts of swearing that's had to be beeped out. There's embarrassing moments in it. You know, it's the whole point was to show what really goes on in a race team, and that actually it's not all glitz and glamour all the time, and it's hard work. And the original premise actually came from the fact that I was getting fed up with seeing on social media fans going, oh, this person deserves that drive, this person deserves that drive. And it's like, right, it costs, you know, to put someone in a BTCC car for the year is the price of a big house. And they have to get the money from somewhere. It doesn't just magically appear. And part of it was going, right, we need to show people that, you know, to go out there and get sponsorship is really, really difficult, you know, and you have to deliver. And to deliver takes a huge amount of planning and a lot of people. And it's not a simple thing. And that's where it all came from.
I love the non-scripted bit and the fact that you're saying all of that. The fact that you're illustrating that it's hard work. But I really like that. I mean, it's tying through in my head to the fact that the authenticity of PMR and the BTCC, I think, is coming through very strongly. And in a world where I would argue there's a large lack of authenticity, I would imagine its appeal is just going to grow and grow.
We've worked together for a little while, and you know that we're almost too honest sometimes, and that, you know, you'll ask us a question and if we can't do it, we'll very frankly say, look, we can't do that, and we'll offer a solution to it, but, you know, we never want to lead people on and say yes, we can definitely do that, and then let them down at the last minute. It's a case of managing expectations and doing things properly so that everybody's happy.
Love it, absolutely love it. Now, you mentioned the price of a medium large house, so how much does it cost to keep the team racing for a full season?
North of $1 million.
Okay.
Really, to keep the two cars running for the year to the level that we do it at. So we do things properly. We life all of our components, which basically means that everything on the car has a shelf life on it. And it may get damaged. If it gets damaged, it goes in the bin. If it reaches, you know, 80% of its shelf life, it goes in the bin. And we have to run it like that to make sure that we don't have mechanical issues. And to do that costs a lot of money. Okay. Realistically, I think our budget per year without damage is about 1.3 million, something like that.
Okay. So that's to keep it going as is. So if I was to challenge you and say, right, what does it take to make PMR Racing the consistent winner of the BTCC year in, year out?
Do you know what? It's all about testing. So at the start of the year, we're not allowed to test during the year other than at designated test days, which are very few and far between, which we take advantage of as long as the budget's there, because, you know, getting a car out for the day is 15 grand. It's not a cheap thing to do.
Okay.
But it's if we could do more testing in the winter, that would stand us in massively good stead as we come into the start of the year, because we've learned the nuances of the car. A lot of people go out to Spain to test in the winter because you've obviously got consistently decent temperatures. Tracks are very similar. The track temperatures are very similar to Britain in summer, but it's a really expensive exercise, and we could probably spend a quarter to a third of our budget testing
tussing
for a week.
At 15 grand a day and then some, it's easy to see how that racks up really quickly.
I mean, realistically, if you wanted to go out, if you're going out testing in Spain, 15 grand a day might do you, you know, two or three sets of tires. You want to be putting multiple sets of tires on that car to get the best out of it. And, you know, a grand to 1500 quid a set, it's not cheap.
Okay. I have a question actually, because I mean, again, with a lot of the kind of teams that we deal with across different sports, the kit or that's required for the competitors to take part is important, right? Be that cars, bikes, rackets, whatever it is. But outside of that, they tend to have a couple of sponsorship categories which they really like to have fulfilled. So if we forget the car for a second, where so much goes into it, what are the three most important, I'm going to say, partners or partner categories you would like to have or do have?
I would say by far the two most important are probably the infrastructure of the team and hospitality. We work with a lot of, we've got a lot of technical partners on the car, and we work with a few people away from the car. So people like Geisen, who manufacture shop blasting equipment and things like that. We work quite closely with them, because that really helps us with components for the car, but for also for other things as well. But things like hospitality, again, we've got a few small sponsors for that, but having a large hospitality sponsor that provided food, drink, and even the stupid things like crockery and cutlery and tables and chairs and all these sort of things, it makes a huge difference, because we always want to be at the top of the game, but going out and buying brand new chairs every year is not a realistic proposition, because they're, you know, it's a hugely expensive endeavor. And at the end of the day, we want to be spending the money on the cars to go out and win races. It's quite a difficult question to answer, actually.
Yeah, that's why I asked it. Yeah, it's not, you know, you're telling me it takes a lot of planning and hard work to win races as well. You know, consider the podcast a race. Yeah. So moving on to, in your role, the trends you might have seen in sports sponsorship. I mean, looking particularly, I mean, please God, we're coming out of the end of this pandemic now. Well, certainly in a particular part of the world where we're all lucky enough to be getting vaccinated. But COVID-19 and the pandemic has given the world of sport an absolute shooing. So how have you adapted to that situation?
Yeah. I think we've, do you know what, as a team, it sounds awful, but we haven't really been affected by it. I mean, other than, people not being able to come to races, that's the only major effect we've had to date. Now we're coming out of that and having people back to the races, we've got hospitality back open and everything. I think a lot of companies are looking at how they can be seen to be, you know, that they've survived and that they're thriving at the end of it. And it's one of those things where when we're talking to people now, we're having conversations about the fact that they are, people want to show to people that they're still there, they're still kicking, they're still at the top of their game, and they're the people we're talking to, because it's what we do is so high profile and so visible that it's a really good way of going, we're still here, and waving your hands and flying the flag for it. That seems to be the way that it's looking as we go into 22.
Okay, interesting. So, and again, I guess with a part eye on the future, but also looking back to, let's say, 2015, when you launched the team officially, in that period of time, have you noticed any change in what partners look for, or is it kind of similar?
I think now it's there's a lot more business related, you know, B2B stuff going on. Before it was just visibility; people just wanted their brand to be seen. Whereas over the last couple of years, people have wanted to be introduced to people to further their business, really.
Okay.
But I do think that COVID is bringing those two together almost. I think there's a lot of people that, like we've just said, want their brand to be seen, but they also want a tangible business benefit there. You know, they don't want to spend hundreds of thousands of pounds having their name emblazoned on the side of the car if it looks like they're going to be making redundancies and stuff, because it doesn't look like a good way to do things. But actually, it's a good way of showing that, you know, the business is strong, the business is solid, and then your customers stick with you, don't they? Because nobody wants to be on a sinking ship. And if it looks like your business is sinking, I think people run away. Whereas if you're on the side of a race-winning British touring car out at the weekend and people go, oh, I saw you at the weekend, your car won this race and everything, it looks like you're thriving.
It could be argued that at some points you need to cut your cloth to your situation. So just because a business unfortunately may need to let some people go, it doesn't mean that it's on its knees necessarily.
No.
Looking at the journey you've had with PMR so far, I'm going to challenge you to come up with your top three best moments.
That's a challenge.
Of course it is.
Do you know what? I think the best moment we've had was in our first year of racing properly as a team. We won the Jack Sears Championship, which at the time was a trophy for the best rookie. So the best person that had never raced in BTCC. They scored points. Anyone that was eligible for the championship won points. And in our first ever year, we got a couple of podiums and we won that trophy, which we actually won again in 2017. And that's pretty much unheard of within the sport. I would say that was quite an exciting thing. I think our first race win was quite historic. That was the second race of 2018 was our first win, and Senna Proctor started 28th on the grid to win the race, in 20 minutes, which is pretty impressive. That was definitely a highlight. There were a lot of tears that day. And actually I'd say Jason Plato's first win in the car, which was actually the very last round of 2019. He won in the car, and he hadn't won a race for, I think, 3 years at that point, something like that. So again, that was a pretty happy day, and it was a really good way to end the year, because, you know, we were all going away from there, we hadn't won that weekend and stuff, and then came through and won that race. It was a really good way to end the year, and then obviously COVID happened, so we were quite happy that in 2020 we had a bit of a weird year in that we didn't race properly. So our last proper race going into 2021, we'd won.
That's amazing, because it means you're going into it, oh, it was a tough period, on a high.
Yeah, exactly.
It also means after a long break, you're starting up again and having to rediscover that. Anyway, that's another day's topic. You mentioned mindset earlier, you know, but looking at the team, this is now just a bit of fun or crack, as we might say in Ireland. So among the team, if you were to name the team joker, who would that be?
I think that'd have to be Adam, who's the team owner. He is, as much as he takes things seriously in business, when we're racing and having a laugh, he doesn't take anything seriously. And he swears a lot.
Okay. And who's the music guy? Who's the team DJ?
Oh, that'd have to be Colin, I think. So Colin is our fabricator, but he's a bit of a hair metal fan, and I think a couple of nights every month he lives up in Nottingham, and he dresses up in all his finery and his big leather boots and all this stuff and goes to gigs. He's a big music man.
Okay, good stuff. And because I threw this one in, it's not a normal one, but best handbrake turn.
It's got to be Colin again, actually. He does he does a lot of road rallying, and he's quite a handy driver, to be fair. We've said to him a few times he needs to get in a race car, but I don't think he wants to.
Okay. Nerves of Steel winner.
I'd say Andrew, who's one of our number ones. He started with us as an apprentice. He's only 21. I've never seen him flinch from anything. I think he may not actually feel pain.
So most languages spoken by, it's a tough one.
I think probably me, actually. I mean, I only speak three languages, but I think it's probably me. I don't know anyone else here who speaks anymore. So
Now you've mentioned the three, you have to tell us what they are. So
French, although not to an amazing level. I speak fairly good French, but not completely fluent. And Ukrainian.
Yep. Ukrainian.
Ukrainian, bizarrely.
Okay.
I've got a bit of an obsession with Chernobyl, so I've been over there quite a few times, and I've made friends with a few people over there, and I thought it's best to learn. So I actually speak fairly good Ukrainian, bizarrely.
Wow. That is impressive. For what it's worth, the Sportnors platform, which most listeners will hopefully be aware of, has been developed by our dev team, who are based in the Ukraine.
I love Ukraine. Beautiful country. There you
go. Oh, they're great people to work with. Absolutely great people to work with. And the last kind of team-based question, who's the hardest one to feed? Who's got the biggest appetite?
That'd be Paul, which is Jason Plato's number one mechanic. He's got his own bucket of mayonnaise in hospitality. I'm not joking.
Oh, God. Okay, so there we go. So if there's any mayonnaise manufacturers listening to this,
save us
Paul
a fortune.
Paul is your man. All right, and just to wrap up on you, Si, if you have a sporting hero, so you mentioned how you've grown up and the whole family and have been into motorsport, really. So if you have a sporting hero, is it someone in motorsport by chance?
Yeah, it is. Richard Burns, who was a rally driver that we sadly lost a few years ago through a brain tumour. He was a young guy from the UK who won the World Rally Championship. And actually carried on racing when he had his brain tumour, and he fought really hard for cancer charities and all sorts of stuff, and he was a proper inspiration to a lot of people, I think.
Wow, that's definitely a worthy hero. So, favourite way to relax?
Again, it's car related. It's just going for a drive. I've got a little mini John Cooper Works that I've done a lot of things to, and I actually went out last night and just drove into the Cotswold for a couple of hours and just, yeah, it's a nice way.
The Cotswolds, such a lovely part of the UK.
That's where I grew up.
Yeah. So, oh my God.
Not far from
there. I don't feel sorry for you anymore now. Yeah. if not motorsport, what's your favourite sport?
Cricket. I'm a cricket man. I used to play cricket at school. So, yeah, kind of grew up around all that. Tim Curtis was my cricket coach, actually.
There you go. Well, you might have noticed that one of the latest sponsors for Cricket England is a company called IG.
I have.
I used to work for them. So, there you go. And, there used to be a bit of a lot of cricket fans in there as well. And actually there was a clearly an office in Australia as well. So there's a good bit of banter back and forth.
Strange that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last one on you, and then I let you go. What's the best thing that's happened to you so far this week?
I invested in air conditioning for my house. That is definitely the best thing that has happened this week in the ridiculous heat wave and living in a 300 odd year old house that is horrifically hot in this weather. Definitely air conditioning.
Okay, well, you know, I'm gonna take a little card which says I can call you back on that in the depths of winter to see if it's still useful. But that's
the house is horribly cold in winter, so
okay, but so anyway, there's another topic there about how you choose your houses, but anyway. Not to worry. A project. You definitely seem like a man who's into projects. So, thank you very much for taking time to talk to me on the sit down. Clearly, for anybody listening, hopefully you've learned a lot about the BTCC and Paramax Racing. Si McNally has been our guest. You can tell he's a straight shooter. Definitely open for conversations about how PMR can partner with whoever you are and to help remove some of your pain points and deliver some value.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Right. No worries. Thanks a million, Si. Cheers.
Cheers.
That's all for this episode. Thanks once again to Si and to everyone continuing to download and listen to The Sit Down. We truly appreciate your support. If you're interested in partnering with Paramax Racing, send us an email at pmr@sportendorse.com or reach out to us via social media. Be sure to follow Sport Endorse on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn for all the latest updates. Until the next time, take care.